Low-wage workers in D.C. joined the Fight for 15 National Day of Action, and the March to Justice heads to Baltimore and D.C. from New York, coming up next. And welcome to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition for April 16th, 2015, on WPFW Washington 89.3, your station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. I'm Esther Avam. As always, we have a lot for you in this less than an hour, starting with what happened here in D.C. yesterday as part of the National Fight for $15 and the Union. Then in the second half of the show, we're going to talk to an organizer for the regional leg of the March to Justice, which kicked off Monday from New York City with 100 activists, marchers, and will be arriving in Baltimore officially on Saturday and in D.C. on Tuesday for a rally. So we have a lot to bring you today, so let's go right to the steps of City Hall, the Wilson Building in Northwest D.C., where there was a press conference yesterday to support a ballot initiative in the district to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Hear our voices from that event.
It is not right that in the capital city of this wealthy nation that more than one quarter of D.C. children are living in poverty. It is not right that the bottom fifth income bracket of D.C. households are taking home on average just $9,900 per year. You cannot live on that. You cannot raise a family on that. Like other religious traditions, Judaism teaches kavod habriyot, the dignity of every living being. That dignity encompasses the right to decent wages and working conditions. The book of Deuteronomy in Holy Scripture says plain and clear, you shall not abuse a laborer, and it admonishes employers not to exploit or oppress their workers. Let us take these words to heart. Let us pray for strength and courage. Let us stand together and mobilize across the city and the nation. Let us support one another and not be deterred to restore the dignity of labor, to build a society based on justice and respect for all working individuals. Let us say amen.
Amen. Amen.
Thank you.
Yes.
Again, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for coming out. I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Devon from WFP. Please come up, please.
Good morning.
Uh-oh.
I need that a little better than that. I said good morning.
Good morning.
All right, that's more like it.
Yes.
My name is Delvon Michael. I'm the executive director of D.C. Working Families. And there's no place I'd rather be this morning, April 15, 2015, and standing in solidarity with you, fighting for $15 for everyone in a union. We are here today because workers in D.C. and across the country are being vastly underpaid for their work and hurting their families and our entire community. Fast food workers, restaurant workers, child care workers, home caregivers, airport workers, adjunct professors, Walmart workers from every corner of this country are here to fight for $15 an hour. In D.C. alone, housing is getting more expensive. Jobs are paying less and families are struggling to get by. More than 25% of our children in D.C. live below the poverty line, and that's not right. We can do better than that.
Right.
The average income of the bottom fifth of D.C. households is just $9,900. Can we do better than that, people?
Yeah.
The district's top 20% has an average income that is 29 times higher than the average income of the bottom quintile. Using this measure, D.C.'s level of inequality is third highest in the country, and we can do better than that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be that way. And that's why I'm standing with my partners at ROC and home care workers and allies all across this city to introduce a ballot measure in D.C. that will raise the minimum wage for everyone to $15 an hour. If workers across D.C. are paid $15 an hour, they wouldn't have to rely on public assistance to support their families. They could hold their heads up high. They could stand strong. And they would have more money in their pockets to spend in the community and uplift D.C. to be the kind of city that we know it can be.
Yes!
Now, I want you all to do something for me.
What's that?
I want you to remember what this fight is about. This fight is not about what Walmart and McDonald's thinks it's about. It's not about profit share. It's not about stock prices. It's not about bottom lines. This fight is about real people.
Yes.
This fight is about where we are as a city and what we've become as a nation.
Yes. Yes.
And lastly, this is a historic moment, my friends. Let us not forget that even the New Deal exempted agriculture and domestic workers from its protections. And that recent proposed legislation sought specifically to deny healthcare workers a living wage. Now, we're going to have $15, and we're going to end the two-tiered wage system that allows employers to pay tip workers in D.C. a wage of only $2.77 an hour. But you won't get it because it's fair. You won't get it because it's right. And you sure as heck won't get it because the Walton family gets an attack of sudden conscience. You're going to have to demand it. You can't take no for an answer.
Yes.
And we got to fight for 15.
Yes.
I want to thank you all for all the work that you've done, all the work that you are doing, and most importantly, for the work that you're about to do. Because you all are here, I truly believe that we will have a path to $15 in a union by the end of 2016, as long as we stand together,
yes,
stay together,
yes,
and pray together.
Yes.
And let the record reflect that on this day, Wednesday, April the 15th, people gathered in D.C. just like they gathered together across this great nation to declare that $15 in the union will be the reality of everyone in this country. Thank you.
Our next speaker will be Ms. Lisa Brown. She is the Vice President of the 1199 United Healthcare Workers East, Maryland, D.C. Division, headquarters in Baltimore, Maryland. Her career in healthcare began as a licensed practical nurse in the healthcare and lead a force that fights for healthcare workers on the road to 15 and a union.
Thank you. It's not just 1199 out here today. It's a whole coalition. I'm standing here with my brother in labor, Jaime, from 32BJ. We're fighting for all low-wage workers, everybody across the country. No one who is working a full-time job should be eligible for Medicaid. Nobody who is working a full-time job should be able to get food stamps, should be on public assistance. But that's what these workers have to do to make ends meet, because the bosses feel that it is their job to take all of the money. So profits matter before people. 25% of the children in D.C. are under poverty. And what does that mean for us that pay taxes, right? So on tax day, we're here to send the message that workers want to pay taxes, but they can't pay taxes if they don't make a living wage. And so a fight for 15 in a union is important, and we will stand with these workers until we win.
Woo!
Okay, we have another speaker, Mr. Caton J. Hammer. Please come up.
Hello, my name is Caton, and I'm a student at American University and also on the National Coordinating Committee for United Students Against Sweatshops. USAS is a nationwide student-run organization that runs campaigns with our campus workers and internationally with workers who produce collegiate apparel. I just want to talk for a minute or two about why we as students care about this ballot measure and why students across the country today are mobilizing in the Fight for 15 movement. We as students realize that the corporatization of higher education not only affects us as students, but our communities and our country as a whole. As tuition continues to increase and students graduate with an increasing amount of debt, we realize that the money we're paying doesn't go to actually help those who make our education possible, our workers. Through working with our housekeepers, our food service workers, our shuttle bus drivers, our adjunct professors, and other workers on campus, we've seen that no matter what service or sector people are in, increasingly people are not given jobs in which they're treated with respect and which they can support their families. That's why we as students come out to support our workers. We kicked off April 15th, early yesterday, when 33 students from Northeastern had a sit-in to support their adjunct professors. But we realized that this is not only confined to our universities, but this is part of a statewide and nationwide problem that's affecting us as a country. That's why students realize that we're being taken advantage of by the same system as workers are, which is why we're hitting the streets to ensure that all people have a living wage. That's why we stand in solidarity with those for Fight for 15, why USAS chapters in Tennessee are part of the statewide living wage campaign, and why I, as a DC student, am so excited about this ballot measure. Coming from a working class family myself, I know a $15 minimum wage could have a huge impact upon me and my family and our financial situation. And having talked with the workers at my university and across the district, I know that a $15 minimum wage could have a huge impact upon DC families and upon the larger DC community. I also know that as students and as graduation approaches, that young people are the next generation of workers, and that it's our responsibility as young people to stand in solidarity with movements like the Fight for 15 in order to ensure that all people have a living wage. And that's why I'm excited to be here today and to keep moving with this campaign. And students will be mobilizing throughout the next year to ensure that this ballot measure passes. And I, for one, am excited to see a $15 minimum wage in DC. Thank you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's move on. Our next person, we have Cynthia Murray from Walmart. Okay, give her a hand.
My name is Cynthia Murray. I'm a Walmart worker and a proud member of our Walmart organization, United for Respect, across the country. I am here today to stand with the home care workers, the fast food workers, the retail workers, and all the rest of who worked hard every day to provide for our families. I am here today because I know the difference that workers can make when we stand up and speak with one voice. As a part of our Walmart, my co-workers at Walmart and I have been putting our jobs on the lines and speaking out for the need for fair wages and fair schedules. And together, we made change at Walmart. Our Walmart members pushed Walmart to publicly commit raises, to raise the wages for 500,000 workers. Our promised raises go into effect this month, but our work isn't done. Because these raises, especially without any guarantee of ours, is a promise that falls short of what we need to feed our families. $9 to $10 an hour, especially with my scheduled hours changing every week, is just not enough. That is why, as the company is starting to roll out the raises, we won. Momentum is building in our stores, in our communities, like never before for 15 of full-time work. With the $16 billion in profits and $150 billion in wealth for the owners, Walmart and the Waltons can afford to provide the good jobs that Americans need. That means $15 an hour, full-time, consistent hours, and respect for our hard work every day. And it isn't just Walmart workers who are struggling. While companies profit at an all-time high,
Workers at the largest and most profitable employers can't feed their kids because they're living in poverty. That's why we are joining workers from across our economic today. Our Walmart members made the country's largest employer change. Now it's time to win the 15 an hour we all need at Walmart and at our employers, so working people in America, again, can afford to raise our families. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Paula Wilson, and I'm here to read a quote by Martin Luther King, which says, I have the audacity to believe that people everywhere can have 3 meals a day for their bodies, education and culture for their minds, and dignity, equality, and freedom for their spirits. I'm here as a home care worker supporting the $15 wage increase for all DC workers.
I'm Lynette Reese, a home care worker. When I say 15 yes, you say we won't settle for less. 15 yes.
We won't settle for less.
15 yes.
We won't settle for less.
15 yes.
We won't settle for less.
15 yes.
We won't settle for less.
Thank you.
You're listening to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. And you just heard voices from yesterday's press conference on the steps of the Wilson Building to support a proposed ballot initiative to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour in the district. Next are voices from a vigil held last night at the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial. And we'll go to those voices now.
Gladys, I am very, very happy to talk for $15 an hour. $15 is all what we need to make a living. I have been working in DC for the last 8 years. For $10.50, I'm unable to take care of my daughter. I start work. I work overnight and get up the next day. I'm at work from 7 to 10, from 10 in another home to 2:20. From 2:20, I go to another place. I work to about 6:20. And then I go back home and unable to lay on my bed. I had to go to another job in the night just for me to make a living. I believe that if we have $15, it will give me more time to spend with my daughter. It will help me to provide for my daughter. There is a Bible verse that says, "For I know the plan I have for you, says the Lord. Plan for good and not of evil, to give you a future and a hope." $15 will give us a future and a hope. It will make our life better. We'll be able to pay our bills. Last month, I was unable to pay my Pepco bill because it came 400 and something. I think if $15 is there, I will be very much grateful. Dr. Martin Luther King says that I have the audacity to believe that people everywhere can have 3 meals a day for their bodies. $15 will give us good food, vegetables. Instead of having butter and cheese that will make us get big, $15 will help us to have organic food in our pot so that the child can also grow well. Education and culture for their mind and dignity, quality and freedom for their spirit. $15 will give us dignity to move around and feel like people instead of walking from one home to the other. I'm here fighting that. Healthcare in DC should have $15, especially home her aid. I worked last year 7 weeks without being paid till today. Nobody cares. If I do not have a job today, nobody will give me money. And we also am believing that home health care needs some time. They need sick leave. They need insurance, health for their children, even for themselves. I'm praying that God will touch everyone in this country, especially the leader, to know that how care in D.C. they need at least a minimum wage. So God bless you.
Folks together.
We're working folks together. We shall not be moved. We're working folks together. We shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's planted by the water. We shall not be moved.
We fight for better wages.
We fight for better wages. We shall not be moved. Fight for better wages. We shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's planted by the water, we shall not be moved.
Of course, we shall not be moved. Okay, here we go.
We shall not be moved. We shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's planted by the water, we shall not be moved.
$15 an hour.
$15 an hour.
Hey!
We shall not be moved. $15 an hour. We shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's planted by the water, we shall not be moved.
We're fighting for our children.
We're fighting for our children.
Sing, y'all.
We shall not be moved. We're fighting for our children. We shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's planted by the water, we shall not be moved.
We shall not.
We shall not. We shall not be moved.
Yes.
We shall not. We shall not be moved, just like a tree that's planted by the water. We shall not be moved.
First of all, it's just good to be here. It was a hard day to travel through D.C. downtown, as y'all know. Because of all the cars in town, all the tourists in town, it's just gridlock all over the place. But one of the things that's important that we are here, because at this setting, at this Martin Luther King Memorial setting, because one thing that Dr. King was doing was really linking the whole idea of civil rights and human rights with economic justice. Now, I know that everybody, all they want to talk about come his birthday is his I Have a Dream speech. And they forget about all the other substantive arguments that he was making, that what does it do anyone to desegregate and not be able to even buy a hamburger at a lunch counter? He was raising those kinds of economic issues. And it is still pressing upon us. It's no coincidence, no coincidence that one of his last actions were with sanitation workers in Memphis, Tennessee. Because that was the core of who he was. But it's not only the core of who he was, I got to say this, that is the core of the gospel. that talks about economic justice over and over again. It differentiates between the rich and the wealthy and those who are poor and trying to come into living on an equal footing and be respected in terms of justice. You cannot avoid it. Any preacher that stands up and tries to avoid economic justice is not a preacher at all and doesn't belong in a pulpit or in a neighborhood, because you cannot avoid that subject whatsoever. That's why Amos can say, let justice roll down like water and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. If you go back and you look at that text, he says, take away from me all your ritual. Take away from me your songs. Take away from me your celebration. He said, instead, he says, let your conduct be such that it allows justice to roll down on every single soul and every single soul be anointed with an equality. That's what we're out here for. $15 an hour? Why do folks think that that's too much? I came through D.C. today. Every place in D.C., they're building something that's not affordable, building something that you can't even put your big toe in because it's too expensive, right? Up in Fort Totten, they got a little bitty place. I just saw it online. Little bitty place. $1,470 a month in order to be able to live there. It is nothing but closets. Amen? It's nothing but a closet. That is all over D.C. The fact is, in this metropolitan area, you cannot afford to live here even with $15 an hour. Let's be honest about it. $15 an hour is a step forward. It's a step up. But we need to continue to push for a living wage. I'm so glad also to be joining home health care workers in their struggle for justice and be respected.
That's right.
You know, I've been blessed. My mother will turn 100 years old in June. My father is 94. In July, yeah. She robbed the cradle. But they're still together. And because of their age, we've had to employ home health care aides. And when you see what they do, you see how they care and how they come out of their hearts to really give of themselves so that my mother can be comfortable and secure, and my father knows that there's someone there to help them out. You realize that they don't get enough for what they get paid for. And that's why we need to talk about unions, and that's why we need to talk about a living wage, and that's why we need to talk about building unity across the board so that people are able to raise their families. People are able to pay the rent. People are able to buy some real estate. People are able to instill some dreams in their children so that their children continue to aspire higher than they could go. That's what we're really, really fighting for, is that people have hope and people have dignity. You know what happens when you take hope and dignity away from people? You know what happens. We see it all the time. I tell this story loud and clear. My father knows I tell it. When I came into this world, my father was doing time at Jessup's House of Correction. Ain't no shame to that. Many a black man has done time someplace. All you got to do is look at the statistics. He was also an alcoholic, particularly on weekends. I'm surprised my mama and daddy stayed together. My mother didn't drink at all, so she fought because she wouldn't back down from a soul. She had a Joe Louis punch on her. I know, because I got hit numbers of times, right? But the reality is, what I'm getting at here is that one thing happened is that when my father and mother finally got together and they were able to put their little pennies together and to buy something like a corner store where they kept the book on us, all of a sudden like that, my father stopped drinking. All of a sudden like that, my father stopped smoking. He never said a word about it until he was in his 80s. He was saying, I felt like less than a human being, and then I was able to buy a place with your mother, and we worked together, and all of a sudden I felt that my humanity was restored, that I could go on and dream a little bit higher, and I knew you were going to go to college because I had moved from one place to another and I had gone up the ladder of life. And so, sisters and brothers, that's what we're talking about, is infusing hope and and dignity, infusing into people, into the process, where people can have some dreams that don't get crushed to the ground and broken. So we're going to continue to build and unionize and come together as one people and push for $15 an hour. And then when we get $15 an hour, we're going to continue to keep pushing, because we got to continue to keep pushing, because justice doesn't end with a $15 figure. Justice continues to go forth until everybody, everybody has the right to raise their family in dignity and hope and respect. Thank you so much.
Wake up, our America. Time to pay your people well. They're the ones who care for you and work hard as hell. When will you see their value? Now's the time to show. Put your money where your mouth is and act like you know. Wake up, all the workers. Time to come take a stand. I know we can do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds, and surely things will work out, cause they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
Hi.
Hi.
My name's Sahara.
How do you feel about what's going on?
Like, some people out in the world, they don't have enough money like McDonald's. They want some more money. Like, for instance, they work hard, and people don't want to give them money. Like their boss, they just want to sit and count the money. Fight for 15!
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition, and you just heard voices from last night's Fight for 15 vigil at the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial. The last little voice you heard was O'Hara, niece of vocalist Ayanna Gregory, and before that, the voices included Ayanna Gregory, D.C. Home Care Workers, the D.C. Labor Chorus, the Reverend Graylin Hagler. Now, when we come back, the March to Justice to Stop Police Murder, Violence, and Impunity heads to the DMV. Stay with us.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
On the picket line,
on the picket line, I'm gonna let it shine. On that picket line, I'm gonna let it shine. On that picket line. $15 an hour, I'm gonna let it shine. $15 an hour, I'm gonna let it shine. $15 an hour, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
How much, how much?
I'm gonna let it shine.
How much?
I'm gonna let it shine.
How much?
I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine.
This little light of mine.
This little light of mine.
Say y'all.
I'm gonna let it shine.
Oh,
this little light of mine.
Y'all do.
I'm gonna let it shine.
$15.
This little light of mine.
Somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right. Yeah. not going to let any dogs or water hoses turn us around. We aren't going to let any injunction turn us around.
We're young, we're strong, we're marching all night long. We're young, we're strong, we're marching all night long. We're young, we're strong, we're marching all night long. We're young, we're strong, we're marching all night long. We're young, we're strong, we're marching all night long. We're young, we're strong, we're marching all night long.
And welcome back to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition on WPFW Washington, 89.3, your station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. I'm Esther Averam, and during the break, we heard more from the D.C. Labor Chorus and a mix including the music of EST, the words of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., and the voices of marchers with D.C. Ferguson. Well, the March to Justice kicked off Monday from New York City with 100 activist marchers and will be arriving in Baltimore on Saturday and in D.C. on Tuesday, where there will be a rally and concert this coming Tuesday. Now, March to Justice lists 10 reasons for their march from New York all the way to D.C., and here are the first six. We march to justice for black men and women, including transgender and non-conforming individuals, the incarcerated undocumented people, and all others in the margins and intersections who are disproportionately impacted by police violence and systemic racism. We march to justice because we believe that together we can change America from a nation who has perpetually functioned upon institutional racism to a nation defined by restorative justice and racial equity. We march to justice because we believe that people deserve to live free from all forms of violence, including the violence of poverty. We march to justice because every 28 hours a black person is killed at the hands of the police, security guards, or neighborhood watch. We march to justice because we acknowledge the erasure of transgender women of color and acknowledge that everyday exposure and disproportionate impact they endure by all forms of violence, including police violence. We march because we believe they have the right to live with dignity and respect and without fear. And we march to justice for black men who are our fathers, sons, and brothers. We march because black men must be valued as whole human beings who are loved and who love and deserve to live freely and safely. Those are six of the 10 reasons for marching listed at their website, marchtojustice.org. And with me today to talk more about the march and police accountability in Maryland is Faraji Muhammad, organizer with the March to Justice organization and initiative. Good morning, Faraji.
Good morning. How are you, Esther?
Oh, I'm fine, fine. So glad to connect with you via Skype. Okay, so the marchers left New York City on Monday.
Right.
What kind of reports are you getting from the field about their journey, I think, through Newark, through New Jersey, and what can you tell us about where they are now and what's been happening with them?
Well, what's happening right now is that, the reports that we've gotten that it has been a very successful a demonstration at this point. They went through, as they gone through New Jersey, the momentum really started to increase. There are about 100 activists that have started this whole the march, and some have even reported about 125. They've gone through New Jersey. They've moved through Philadelphia area, and so Baltimore here, we're getting ready to accept these young brothers and sisters here. As one of the coordinators for Peace by Peace, of the American Friends Service Committee and the 1199 SEIU Union and, Casa de Maryland and many others who are going to be a part of this upcoming rally that we have on Saturday. We're really excited about the opportunity to be supportive of this effort.
Okay.
But most importantly, we're excited about the larger pieces of mass incarceration, community investment, and police accountability. These are the issues of justice that we need to stay focused on.
Okay. Now, before we talk about the events here in the DMV, let's hear some voices from the marchers who left from New York.
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace! No justice!
We have to remind ourselves that Black Lives Matter, that we are important to society. And what is beautiful about this is that young people are standing up at this point. They're standing up and saying, we're going to fight for our future. We're going to demand that this country pays attention to us so that we can have a better future than what is promised right now from what we see on television.
I'll be marching to Newark, and then I plan on going to D.C. for the rally at the National Mall. I'm a person of many identities that have been underserved and oppressed, specifically in the United States. I'm a person of African descent, I'm a person who is of immigrant descent, and I'm a person who is a woman. And I'm a person who is poor. So it's a reality that I have to stand up for the many identities that I represent. The more we push, the more we're out there, the longer we march, and the more resilient we are, I think we'll be able to triumph in small and large ways. All victories are victories.
We should all have respect for each other. Police should have respect for their communities, and communities should have respect for their police. But, you know, in order to have respect for one person or one group, they have to feel that respect too. And that's that's what we've felt a lack of recently.
People are saying that if you care about the issue of black and brown and transgendered people's lives matter, that you have to be anti-police, and it is not so. I have a wonderful relationship with my police department. I work with them every day, and I can only say my only problem is bad acting police officers, and that is what this is about. Bad acting police officers who have no regard for the humanity of the people that they are policing.
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
Okay, those were voices of the activists who launched the march in New York City, the March to Justice from New York City, on Monday. Now, Faraji, what will happen when the marchers, I guess, get to Baltimore officially? Can you tell us a little bit about the rally and what you have planned for Baltimore?
Absolutely. I mean, in Baltimore, you know, we're expecting them to have them this weekend, as you mentioned, Esther. And then, you know, of course, they'll be greeted by various city officials here in the city of Baltimore. And then from there, for the rally, our rally is going to be a very youth-oriented rally. It's going to be the March to Justice rally. But we also want to make sure that we emphasize the message that the change doesn't start with anybody else. We say change starts with just us as a community, just us as a people, just us as the marginalized and the disenfranchised. So our rally is going to be geared toward making sure we show support for the marchers. And then at the same time, making sure that the city of Baltimore know that this movement that's happened all over the country should involve the citizens and the wonderful young people of Baltimore. And that most importantly, that there is an empowering element to this. And I think that when we have these conversations about, you know, protest and the demonstration and the marches and everything, there's often what's not included is the fact that there is an empowerment that we're looking to do for those who are coming out to these rallies. It's important for us to get the political legislation that we need as we're doing. It's important for us to have our voices heard. But the real strength comes from the unity of us. So if you have these 100 activists from March to Justice and connecting with Piece by Piece and SCIU and Casa de Maryland, we got folks from the Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle here in Baltimore. We got folks from the faith community of the Nation of Islam and folks. When you bring in folks together like that, then that creates a more unified effort. And I don't want us to get into the habit that we're just begging. This is a different type of movement that we're seeing with as it relates to police accountability. But we're not going to the federal government with hat in hand, you know, shucking and jiving and begging people for justice. Justice has to be demanded. And justice is not something that you ask for. It's something that you demand, and it has to be demanded with power. But the real power that behind the justice for, or the demand for justice really resonates among our unity as the various groups and the communities coming together.
Okay.
If there's unity, then people can understand that we're really making some progress.
Okay. So before we forget, because we want to announce it a couple times, let everyone know where and when your rally is and how they can connect.
Yes, we are going to be having our rally at the Greater Baltimore Urban League on Saturday, April the 18th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. If you're in Baltimore, if you're in the DMV, come join us at the Greater Baltimore Urban League at 512 North Orchard Street. And that, again, that's going to be this Saturday night from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. We'll have speakers, we'll have artists, but most importantly, it's going to be a very youth-oriented rally as we continue the spirit of the March to Justice activists. For folks to get more information, they can contact 240-707-0384. Again, that number is 240-707-0384. They can also contact, that's the number to reach Peace by Peace Baltimore. You could also contact the 1199 SEIU Union here in Baltimore City. That chapter is one of the key partners in this process. But again, Saturday, April the 18th, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., we'll be at the Greater Baltimore Urban League. We'll have this rally. We'll have this this uniting of forces. And then on Sunday morning, we'll send off our brothers and sisters as they continue the fight and to continue their march to D.C. And then we'll join them on D.C., God willing, on Tuesday, April 21st.
Okay. And I guess since we're at that point, why don't we mention what will happen in D.C. on Tuesday?
On Tuesday, there's going to be a host of things. I mean, I know some of the program is still being worked out. Some of the programmatic things are still being worked out. But I can tell you that they're going to be, you know, of course, we'll have the speakers. There's going to be a delivery of the justice package. We're going to talk about the issue of the militarization bill. We're going to talk about the issue of young people being put in solitary confinement. So we're going to deal with the issue of juvenile justice. So we have a lot of things that are on the table, but there's going to be a delivery of this justice package to federal lawmakers, including the Congressional Black Caucus and all of our black law officials right there in D.C. So it's going to be an historic event, but this is just the kickoff, or rather a continuation of the movement that's already been happening, Esther.
Okay. So is there a place, is there a rally place and time set yet for D.C.?
As far as I know, it's just going to be on the National Mall, but the time has yet to, you know, we're still kind of working it out, to be honest with you. So I would just let folks know that, of course, if they're able to come to the Greater Baltimore Urban League this Saturday, April the 18th, we'll have all of that information for you and how folks can continue to help us in this effort.
Okay. I do know that I received information about Howard University on Tuesday,
yes.
Perhaps at around noon or 10 a.m. or something like that. But we'll try to, you know, inform our listeners. And would it be on your website when it's finalized?
Yes, we're going to try to put it out through social media. We have everybody that's involved. We've already kind of put the word out about the Be More March to Justice, Just Us rally. So, you know, just follow those folks. Definitely go onto the March to Justice Facebook page and then just stay tuned for the information. But again, if you're in the DMV, Saturday, April 18th, this Saturday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., come join us at the Greater Baltimore Urban League at 512 North Orchard Street. We'll have this fantastic rally. Of course, as we welcome our young brothers and sisters from New York City as they make their way to D.C. as we continue to march to justice.
Okay. Now, we're kind of running out of time, but I wanted to definitely mention, have you talk a little bit about the issues in Baltimore and Maryland that have connected people to this issue. We know the issue of Tyrone West and other black men killed by the Baltimore police. And of course, I had Mark Puente, the Baltimore Sun investigative reporter, on the show late last year talking about his excellent series that exposed so much of the brutality and deaths that have occurred in Baltimore. Now, since then, I know there has been legislation proposed in Annapolis, and I think all of those bills failed in this session. So what's happening next? What are some of the ways that people are connecting to this issue that you think are, you know, that you want to highlight in the time we have left, and what's going to happen with that legislation?
Well, I think that the next step is for us to do some things locally. Myself and folks from the Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, Davon Love, and Pastor Heber Brown of Pleasant Hope Baptist Church here in Baltimore, we've been a part of a larger coalition of folks here in the city of Baltimore to kind of push the needle forward on this process. So we did go make those attempts down in Annapolis. 17 police accountability bills killed. They've been tabled. They didn't give us that. They gave us the more politically correct answer, Esther. They've just been put on the table, but they're not going to be voting on them this legislative session. So we're going to regroup and then figure out a new game plan going into the next year's session. However, on a local level, what we're doing is we're going to be strategizing. We're talking to some of our allies down in City Hall. We're looking at the moves of the mayor and the police commissioner. And we're trying to figure out, well, what are the best things that we can get? We also planning to reach out to the state's attorney's office as well to figure out what is the best course of action that we can take as we look forward to, as we try to bring some type of closure to this issue and it doesn't become a thing where nothing, all this effort was put in, but nothing came out. So we're in a strategy mode right now. After Saturday's rally at the Urban League, we want to connect with all of those folks and then say, okay, this is the next step. So we're in strategy session right now. We know that we are against some really big challenges. One of the big challenges that was stated at the in Annapolis was that this seemed like to be a Baltimore City thing, a police brutality versus a statewide thing. So we need to strengthen our coalition and to really get those voices from other counties to be a part of the coalition so that way they can see, the lawmakers can understand that this is not just a Baltimore City issue. This is a statewide problem. So we're in the strategy mode. We're going to go back into the situation room and go and start to figure out what's the next move in our art of war plan.
Okay. So I've been speaking to Faraji Muhammad, organizer for the March to Justice in the Baltimore area, and his event is this Saturday, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Baltimore Urban League. And I know you said to folks can check the Facebook page, but do you have another way for people who aren't as digitally connected to find out more information about the event on Saturday in Baltimore?
Yes, absolutely. They can just use the old school way of talking to us on the phone.
Right.
So they can give me a call at 240-707-0384. Again, that number is 240-707-0384. I serve as one of the director of peace for the Peace by Peace Young Activist Coalition, working in partnership with 1199 SEIU Union, Casa de Maryland. But give us a call at 240-707-0384, and we can get you connected, get you more information. Just want to let you folks know, Esther, that we're looking to do some things after this rally on Saturday. So this is not going to be a one shot deal.
Okay.
So our hope is that our hope and vision is that we can stay, keep people engaged and connected, but most importantly, do some things on the ground level, whether it's, really partnering with, folks that are doing community policing and other initiatives that are already happening. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm just running out of time, but I want to thank Faraji Muhammad. Thank you. So thank you again so much for joining us. And that'll have to do it for me today on Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm Esther Avarim, and I want to give a special thanks to my guest again, Faraji Muhammad, and thanks to our engineer, Mike Nasella. And thank you so much for listening and to your station for Jazz and Justice. I'm also a fan of Justice and Jazz, by the way. So you can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org. OnTheGround.org, where you can listen to all of our past shows. Please like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On The Ground Show. Lots of people have been visiting the Facebook page lately, but please like when you visit. Now stay tuned for the news, followed by Krista Property on the Thursday edition of Don't Forget the Blues. Raise your voice. Peace.